Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome, pod fans, to this week's happening edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Here once again to save you from 7 days of not knowing about the world of tech. This is your regular weekly missive brought to you by the editors of PC Advisor, Tech World, Macworld UK and Computer World UK. Every week we gather the clans in the audio tent of our mystical festival farm field, opening and closing our mouths in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. That you hear us with perfect clarity comes courtesy of our sponsor, Audio Technica, who provided the mics on which we are throwing together this highly calibrated word of pod. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in conversation by the wonderful Ashley Alsop, Engagement Editor of Macworld UK and PC Advisor.
Ooh, hello.
The wondrous Chris Martin, Consumer Tech Editor of PC Advisor.
Bonjour.
And the One Direction loving David Price, Acting Editor of Macworld UK.
Hello.
You're not a One Direction lover at all, are you?
I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Can I just point out Matt did that in one take, the first take. Spot on.
Pretty exhausted. Yeah. Tired now.
I feel like I can't breathe just listening to it.
You guys are going to do the heavy lifting from here on in. This week, we'll be discussing ebooks versus actual books, email versus messenger and collaboration tools, and ransomware versus you, your sanity, and your wallet. You need this. So strap yourself in and off we go. Ashley, welcome to the pod. You're our resident reader, and I wanted to pick your brains on the world of ebooks. This week, Apple was turned away at the steps of the US High Court in an action that means that the ebook wars are essentially over. Amazon's won. It's the only player that matters in this expanding market. But ebooks, to me, don't seem to have changed or developed a great deal over the past few years. It used to be quite a disruptive, exciting tech, and now it's just a thing. And I know that you're not particularly a fan of ebooks, are you?
No, not at all. I actually really, really hate ebooks. I hate the whole idea of it. Just because then you just don't get the physical book. You don't get to feel it. You don't get to smell it. You don't get to organise it on your bookshelf. I mean, I've rearranged my bookshelf. It's kind of a hobby. And, you know, I love to...
Could do that on your Kindle.
You can't. You can't do the rainbow shelf. That's what I like. I've done a rainbow
You
shelf.
Could change your library and project that onto your TV.
You could.
It's not the same thing.
But the,
what's a rainbow thing?
Well, it's, you know, you organise it in colour. Colour.
It's cover deeply colour. Impractical.
Yeah, wow. It doesn't help when you're trying to...
I want to read a red book today.
But more seriously, it actually... I just think in 50 years' time, say, you know, how are you going to read those ebooks? We don't know what's going to happen in 50 years' time. The technology that we've got now is not going to be the same. So are we actually going to be able to read them or not? You're always going to be able to read a physical book.
Yeah, the figure I always quote, always goes down on Twitter, is that the Doomsday Book was completed 930 years ago and we can still read it.
Yeah.
And will we be able to say that in 930 years' time about your Kindle?
Yes, because it's a digital file. As it's a collection of noughts and ones. So as long as we're able to understand software, we'll be able to understand ebooks.
But what if technology? What if all of electricity disappears? You know, haven't you ever seen those futuristic TV shows?
Are we talking about young adult fiction?
Maybe.
Then we will be burning our books to keep warm.
No, but then you need to create a whole library, and you can't do that with digital files if there's no electricity. You know?
I do think there will be a lot of compatibility problems. Yes, it will be possible to transfer things, but it's going to be very difficult. It's already difficult to play games from, you know, systems that were discontinued 10 years ago.
But that's commercial. That's a commercial consideration thing. Yeah. That's software. And, you know, I do think it is slightly different. I do take your point, but I do think it's slightly different because an ebook file is an extremely simple thing, really.
It is a lot easier than, say, a music library or something, or even videos where there's loads of different formats and standards.
Yeah.
I've given up trying to keep my music library in order.
But let's just imagine, for example, that you uncover a lost civilization, and there is, in one scenario, there is a vellum, is that a thing? A vellum manuscript on the floor, and then you spend time deciphering it. You could theoretically discover what it said. But if there's a Kindle on the floor of this Atlantean civilization,
yeah,
it will have degraded a long time ago.
You might think it was the bone of a dinosaur and constructed the whole skeleton from it.
Right. Or, you know, like Wizard of the Victorians, you'd build a temple out of it and just chuck it in the wall.
Could be like that walrus in the Horniman Museum, where they'd never seen a walrus. So when it was sent back from the cold climate from which it came, I don't know which pole it was, they inflated it like a balloon. So there is a walrus in the Horniman Museum that looks, it doesn't matter, it's irrelevant. It's worth going to see.
I'm enjoying it. Is it said Horniman Museum?
That's the name of the museum, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. I'm amazed you haven't been there.
Where were we? To the point.
So you guys all hate trees and you want to keep chopping them down in order to make books in order that aliens can read our culture.
But there is another point to it, which is that if you, like, things have happened in the past where Amazon has accidentally, or maybe on purpose sometimes, deleted books, and it has deleted it from everyone's Kindle. So if they're halfway through reading it, and then it's just gone.
Yeah.
It's a worrying bit of control to give a corporation over a work of culture which has already been disseminated into the world.
So that point I can get on board with. So I would say that, you know, the convenience and scalability of ebooks is, in my view, a good thing. Leaving aside the convenience of reading, so the fact that I can read on any device of mine that I own. I have a Kindle, but I don't actually use it because I typically read on my iPad. And if I don't have my iPad with me, I can read on my smartphone and it picks up the book where I was left off. I don't have that anxiety of finishing a book and not having the next thing because I've got books stacked up in my library because it's just so easy and convenient to make a purchase. So I'm very pro ebooks in that respect. I'm also pro the fact that you can write and publish an ebook really simply. Yeah. It does democratize that whole process. However, the amount of control Amazon has over the market is, I would say, something that's uncomfortable. I mean, I'm not sure that we're going to lose works of art because you know, anything that's out of copyright, for instance, Google has spent a lot of time digitizing those works, which actually preserves them for longer, I would say. But it's not healthy that one company like Amazon has so much control over the book market.
It is a big shame that it's Nook that's gone down, although they are an American company.
So Nook this week exited the UK market, right?
Yeah, so they're pulling out of selling all digital content and handing it over to Sainsbury's, which already has been selling digital content, including films and ebooks, for a while. But it's a bit worrying in the sense that they're handing everything over. It's all a bit unclear as to how it's going to work. People are going to get given vouchers if their books don't match up with Sainsbury's library. And it's all a bit like,
Well, I mean, it's not good for several reasons. It's not good for authors, actually, because I have some experience of publishing for Amazon, and it's great in the sense that you can get to market, but it's actually really unclear how much your book's been sold for, and you're totally in their hands. If they decide to change the price one day or change the amount of commission you get, that's the deal. You just have to live with it. And it's not good that, so for instance, right now I believe Kindle owners have to update the software.
Yeah, see, Ashley's got a point with, you know, a book doesn't go wrong, whereas at the moment anyone with a fifth generation or below, I think that's right, Kindle needs to update it before 22nd of March, otherwise it's going to effectively die.
And that's,
which is a bit ridiculous.
Well, it's also a really unhealthy sign of a market that's dominated by one player, because you couldn't do that in smartphones or PCs or whatever. You couldn't say you have to update or your device will be bricked, because there are other players in the market, so you would lose lots of business through that.
And to be fair, books do go wrong in the sense that paperbacks don't last very long.
Yeah, you drop them in the bath.
They can go wrong, but I mean,
it's a pretty tried and trusted and successful piece of technology, isn't it? A paper-bound book.
Just to clarify, it's fourth generation Kindle Touch up to, and fifth generation Paperwhite that needs updating. And it won't just do it. You need to go and do it.
How does one go and do it?
Supposedly...
A man is looking some stuff up on the internet.
You need to go into the home screen of your Kindle, select menu, then choose sync and check for items. And your Kindle needs to be plugged in overnight, apparently, and connected to Wi-Fi.
This right here is the future of media.
Yeah.
It's writing an article, then looking it up and reading it out on a podcast.
Does anybody else do that thing where... Because I do also read paper books. I'm not against paper books. And actually, sometimes it's cheaper to buy a paper book from Amazon again. So I do that. But I do also find myself pressing on the right-hand page to move to the next page.
No,
that's
bad.
Just me.
Okay. Well, I've never read an e-book, so I don't know. So I can't really say.
What? You're against e-books and you've never read one?
No.
Outrageous.
I'm kind of in the middle. Like, I have proper books because I like the experience, same as Ashley, but at the same time, I can see the pros of having a Kindle and just carrying that around, taking that on holiday and not having to choose, like,
you don't have
a
to
few
fill up
books
your whole
that you're going
to
read.
But I don't actually agree with that, because I think you go on holiday, the most you need is... I go for 2 weeks each summer to France and sit around a lot, and I get through 3 books.
What?
And, and that's all you... That's
read
all you,
faster.
Yeah, I read, like, in 2 weeks, I read maybe 10.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that I don't want to necessarily make that decision before I leave.
Anyway.
I'd read some of 3 books in a fortnight just anyway.
All right, you're all embarrassing me. I'm a slow reader. But
I'm the slowest. I would probably not even read one book in a couple of weeks, but I don't necessarily want to choose what that one book is.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making is that it makes sense for music to go digital, because when you're walking around, then you like to have 3,000 songs because you might listen to anyone at any point. But books, generally speaking, you're reading one book at a time.
Nope.
Generally speaking, normal people are reading one book at a
time. I always have 2 or 3 books on the
day. All right, you have 2 or 3, but that's not quite in the same category as I want to listen to any one song now and it only lasts 3 minutes.
No, and also, I don't always reread books, whereas if I like a piece of music, I'll listen to it multiple times.
Exactly. So when I go on holiday, I can manage with my 3 books, and then maybe I'll pick up another one here and there. But music, I wouldn't want to be stuck with 3 CDs, because...
But you do go on holiday to a library, don't you, so...
I do. Well, there is a library there because it is a house, but actually, not all houses have libraries. To
wow!
Good lord,
that's a terrible thing to admit.
This just proves how posh David is.
I'm not sure that applies. Posh people don't read anyway, do they? They don't need to.
Posh people have libraries.
Yes.
Yeah, but they don't use them, do they?
Is there also a scullery and a passage under the ground from the kitchen to said scullery? Yeah. Do murders happen? Do you go on holiday to the Cluedo house?
I go to Midsummer.
Okay, on that bombshell, let's go around the room.
I'll be in the billiard room.
With a candlestick.
I think I know the answer to this question, but let's quickly go around the room and say ebooks versus paper books. Chris?
50-50.
David?
I very much prefer books, but incidentally, which hasn't really come up, I prefer digital comics.
Okay, Ashley?
obviously, books, paperback.
I'm broadly speaking an ebook guy, though. Don't discount the paper book. We'll be back in a couple of seconds to move on to our next topic. So, Chris, let's talk email. This week, the godfather of email, Ray Tomlinson, passed on. At the same time, we're increasingly talking about using collaboration tools such as Slack in our working lives, and Messenger and social media tools are still growing in popularity. So I just wanted to ask, what is the state of email? How do you find using email? And is Ray Tomlinson headed to the great inbox in the sky or the spam filter down below?
Good questions. I'm sure I speak for everyone around the table when I say that my email is something of a daily battle more than something that I like doing. I'm sure all of us get a lot of email that is just junk and or people trying to get us to look at something that we are probably not interested in.
Yeah.
I've had so many emails to my work email asking to buy things from from like building supplies to beehives, and it's just like, I don't understand why those kind of things happen anyway.
You look like the kind of guy who would like a beehive.
I'd quite like to keep bees one day, maybe.
Yeah. I don't think he'd sell the beehives.
That's
though.
A separate
for
topic.
Yeah.
They're barking up the wrong tree there.
Yeah. My personal email is kind of just newsletters from various retailers trying to get me to buy stuff.
So that's so this is not a mostly positive view of email. I guess it's ubiquitous at work, but I guess it's an important functional tool for work.
This is the problem. It's not like we can just switch it off because we need it. Because when that important email comes in, it's obviously makes a difference. And obviously we use it a lot to communicate, but it's just spotting that email that is actually worth reading is the task.
And I always think training yourself to use email in an effective way. So, you know, to check it every hour or so and to switch it off at a certain point of the evening and all those things. How about you guys? How's your experience of email?
I don't like it. But I feel like I should defend Ray Tomlinson a little bit here because it's something that transformed the
It's a brilliant invention. It's
sort of outlasted.
It's just been abused.
Well, exactly. Yeah. This is the problem is that it's susceptible to spam because you don't have to pay to send messages. And so it's become completely overrun by people that, as you said, abuse it. I find that Twitter and, you know, fingers crossed, Slack is gonna do the job as well. Because email is just this blunderbuss effect. You can't make out the gold in the river. I've gone down some weird
classic David
analogy.
But I wondered whether. So I heard this argument yesterday, and I think it's quite interesting that the sort of positive future for email is that those other tools are taken away. Because one of the problems for email has been that it's so ubiquitous and it's so constant and it's there and everyone has to have it if you work in an office environment, that it's become a repository for all this crap. That actually, in some ways, so we're talking about using a collaboration tool like Slack that could take some of the weight off email. And, you know, you can sort of filter out those marketing messages and personal messages can be done over a messenger service or over social media. An email actually that was intended, as the name suggests, to be electronic mail, to be something that can't be ignored but doesn't have to be responded to immediately, and can be used for formal communications and for sending documentation and for longer, more in-depth communications. And the rise of rival tools should actually make email use better. Is that plausible?
I'll believe it when I see it. To be honest, I feel more pessimistic in the sense that I suspect that those other methods will become increasingly as bad as email rather than email becoming better. Because we've seen this with texting spam, which at one point we thought, well, at least, you know, they can't send us messages because they have to pay for each message. But then they've soon found ways around that and everything gets spam on it. Everything gets spam on it eventually and becomes.
Yeah, we get spam on Twitter and sometimes even on Facebook. You get spam on everything, I think, so it's going to happen.
There must be some way for them to break into Slack, and I'm sure they're just trying to work out how to do it.
Hopefully not, but I actually quite like email. Now I'm going against everything again. But because I find it quite satisfying. You can tell. You don't have to open every email. You can tell which ones are important.
Yep.
It's quite easy to delete the ones that aren't. I don't open probably 90% of my emails. I never open.
Well, especially using Gmail, as we all do for our work email, you just archive everything, don't you? So I'm broadly speaking the same camp.
And then when you do get a really good email, it's quite exciting, I think. Because sometimes they can be like really good. They can be exciting emails.
It is nice. But and I've trained myself to basically delete.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Without reading,
yeah.
So I can just see
triage
who it's from, kind of, yeah. You know, the stupid subject lines,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Some of them do trick you, though.
Yeah,
yeah, they do. Yeah.
But yeah, it is nice getting a good one.
But I think training yourself is a key thing. So I'm exactly the same. I can be a slave to it, but I train myself not to. So I typically spend my train journey in the morning, really sort of sorting through, triaging email. Not necessarily responding, but just setting up what I need to respond to. And I try very hard to respond to email in bursts at most once an hour. And what I like about it is what I worry about with other media is an email will still be there when you get back to your desk, when you get back to your device. It is like the post in that respect. So professionally, when we're using it at work, if I'm sending you an email, I'm not expecting you to respond to it straight away, but I am expecting you to read it, acknowledge it. And I don't think there's another medium that works exactly like that. Something like Slack could be really great, but it concerns me that it could be ignored as well.
I'm kind of with you. I'm not quite so excited about using Slack. I like the idea of a lot of our communications being moved off of email, because
yeah.
It's going to make going through my email a bit easier. And for example, the thread for this podcast takes
true.
Up my whole inbox yeah. when I expand it.
I said I was going to do it on Slack.
But equally, it's people tend to only send an email when it's actually worth it.
Mm.
Whereas in like a chat window like Slack, I think it's so much easier for people to just
yeah.
have a and ramble about something that doesn't matter. And we've already
time.
Got loads of GIFs going on
yeah.
and it's already a bit annoying.
So there's some truth in, I guess, what has been said around the room, what David said, which is that... you know, if you create a medium, then people will behave in a certain way towards it, whether it be incoming spam or the potential to waste time within it.
But different people have different experiences. I remember that I used to use email a lot more than I do now. And when I became editor of iPad and iPhone User and I started getting all the PR emails from people who wanted to have their products featured, suddenly that was it. I was on all the mailing lists. And ever since then, I get, you know, 200 emails a day instead of,
yeah.
you know, 10 or whatever.
Maybe you just need filters.
So it's, you know, it's
I think there's an argument for people using email better.
Like, yeah, definitely.
I think we kind of just get on with clicking delete 100 times when you could spend a little bit of time making sure that a lot of that doesn't get through.
Yeah.
But no,
yeah.
I mean, I do this as well. I just go, oh, well, I'll just sit here and press delete
well,
for
it's
half
so easy,
an hour.
Especially on your phone.
Yeah.
I just swipe right all
yeah.
the time and it's gone.
Yeah.
You know? And that's fine. It kind of it works efficiently for me.
Yeah.
You know, I think broadly speaking, you know, email itself isn't broken, although it hasn't developed a huge deal in the past sort of decade or so. But potentially, the way we all use it, as you say, Chris, could be improved somewhat.
Well, there was the dream a few years ago that it was going to get smart, that things like Gmail were going to learn to filter things for you, not with rules, but with just learning what you like.
But it does filter quite a lot. I mean, if you look in your old mail, you'll see a yeah. lot more messages than...
Yeah.
Yeah. But the issue is that we never really trusted that. It has to be done without us knowing, almost. Otherwise, I would be worried that it was going to filter off.
Also, potentially, we're in a slightly unique, you can't be slightly unique, we're in a unique situation in that a lot of what we consider nuisance email comes from people who are contacts of ours, who yeah. are sending speculative PR outreach. I'm sure this happens in a lot of professions, but we get a lot of emails that aren't actually of interest to us, but do come from genuine humans
yeah.
who admittedly, they're sending everyone in their inbox an email, but it's not spam. It's just nuisance email.
No, but our email addresses get out very...
Yeah, well, our email addresses are
very
public.
Yeah, they're very obtainable, so we get sent requests for all sorts of things, and they don't really spend the time looking into whether it's actually...
Slightly angry applicable. Emails from people saying, you didn't pick up my first email about reviewing our app.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude.
Some of them have literally replied to their email like more than 10 times saying, I'm sending you this again.
Yeah.
And in case you missed it.
Yeah. And it's like, wow, come on.
I really miss it so much as to read it because it was rubbish.
Yeah. Also, I hate that thing where they put re::
that's a clever one.
On a fresh email.
Yeah.
As if you've sent them a reply.
I always click that and I'm like, no. Oh.
Yeah. Or forward. Yeah, those are the little tricks. I like ones that are no subject.
Yeah.
I love those.
Mysterious.
Can't help but click on it.
Well, the one
I'm just giving out the secret, how to get an email.
Chris_
How to get me to read an email. No subject.
It's mysterious, isn't it? It's the art of seduction.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, well, I think we've entirely covered email, but let's just quickly go around the room to make our decision on poor old Ray Tomlinson. Inbox in the sky or spam filter down below, Chris?
Great invention, but it's annoying, but we still need it.
So...
don't know.
So not the inbox in the sky or the spam filter down below. We need some sort of purgatory, which is, I guess... pending. Or,
but a nice one.
Yeah, okay, it's in a nice pending tray. Okay, David, inbox in the sky, spam filter down below, or nice pending tray?
Heaven. Definitely heaven. It's an amazing...
Maybe change it to heaven.
Inbox in the sky. Ashley also.
Yes, I'm inbox in the sky as well.
Brilliant.
I like it.
I'm also inbox in the sky. Good old Ray, he's up there. Apart from
for him, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we've
I just want to make that clear.
What does that mean? Good for him, what?
No.
No, that's what I want for him, but...
Oh, what?
Don't worry.
You want him to go to purgatory? No. Wait, what?
I want him to go to heaven. Oh, dear.
Okay.
I think inbox in the sky for him, the way email has been abused, not so nice.
Gotcha. Yeah. Right. Are you clear on that, listener?
Good.
Excellent. Take a minute. We'll be back shortly. David, we haven't really mentioned Apple yet, which I think is a first for the UK Tech Weekly podcast. So, listen, what's the deal with this ransomware story?
Well, it's the first fully functional Mac ransomware. You have to be careful, because there was one bit of ransomware for the Mac in 2014, but it was discovered before it was complete. So this is the first one that's actually getting anybody.
In the wild.
In the wild, exactly. But to go back to the basics... hopefully this isn't too patronising. Ransomware, in general, a kind of malware that gets onto your system and does something bad to your system, and then the people that made the malware get in touch and they ask you for some money. So in this case, it's called Key Ranger. I think that's how you pronounce
it. And are they asking, just to be clear, they're asking you for money to take the malware off, or is it because they've locked down some files? Or
yeah, that's it, the latter. It encrypts all the files on your Mac in this case, and you can't access them and they're useless, and it's 2048 bit, so you can't brute force the encryption or anything like that. It seems to be very, very secure.
So for those Mac users, it's all their like important Word documents, like how to make a macchiato, and you know, it's pretty important stuff.
Very good. And the screenplays they're working on, of course.
Yes,
so they're asking for one Bitcoin. And for those of you that don't have any Bitcoins, that's worth about $400. So it's quite a lot of money. So they're getting in touch. I've actually got...
that's some exchange rate.
Yeah. invest in Bitcoin.
Yeah, definitely. It's a powerful currency. I've got the ransom note in front of me, which sadly is not made of cut-out bits of the Telegraph.
Is it in Comic Sans?
No, it's not. Because it's a .txt file that is attached to every one of your encrypted files. So you get lots and lots of these ransom notes. Oh. And it's actually really polite. And what I really like is that it says, we have a ticket system inside. So if you have any questions, you are welcome. So it's actually got better customer service than Apple itself, I would say, ironically enough. But
there should be an Apple evil genius part.
Yeah, definitely. But luckily, not many people seem to have been caught out. As I understand it, the way that it worked was that it was distributed via a piece of software called Transmission, which is a BitTorrent client. And if you downloaded a specific version of this, I think 2.9.0, then Key Ranger came along with it. Transmission themselves updated their software to get rid of it. So 2.92 was the one that you had to update to not get caught out. And this happened, I think, 2 days later.
Right, okay.
So you have to have downloaded it in this two-day window. Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, again, there is a three-day wait. It sort of sits dormant on your system before it starts encrypting things. So if you were sort of on top of it, you should have updated before it did its did its naughtiness. So I've seen one person on the transmission forum who got caught out. That's where I got this ransom note from. But most people, I think, are okay. So it's not a huge one.
Literally, the only way to get around it is to pay. Is that the...
Or just go to a backup. So you'll have lost you know, everything you had since you last backed up your Mac, which, going by a lot of Mac users I know, might not be ever, sadly. But yeah, it's awful, actually. And I don't think you should pay the ransom, obviously, because that encourages this sort of thing. But if you've, you know, just lost, you know, let's be serious, if you just lost a novel or something, then...
Write it on paper, as discussed previously.
Yeah, exactly. But that's probably worth $400. So it's pretty scary stuff, particularly for Mac users, because because I am a Mac user, we've got used to being a bit smug about security matters in general.
A bit smug.
giving us something else to be smug about. And yeah, the danger is complacency as a Mac user, because Macs, I don't know if I'll come up against any opposition here. Macs, I would say, are indisputably safer than Windows-based PCs, but they are not completely safe. And,
Well, so let's unpack that point. So Macs are indisputably safer for two reasons. One is it's a Unix operating system, so it's sandboxed, and this is actually quite a good example of that. So the vector of threat is not that a virus will get in and cripple the whole machine, because it just can't do that. It can cripple an element of the operating system. So in this case, you know, the users have in effect invited the threat onto their machines, which is what happens mostly in the Windows world as well. But then the other reason that Macs are more secure is that because it's marginally harder to infect than a PC, and because there are way more Windows PCs in the world than there are Macs, then most criminals don't bother targeting the Mac world because they're lazy, essentially. If they were driven go-getters, they wouldn't be in the cyber criminal world.
It's a low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, but it does bring up this hoary old question of whether Mac users should use security software. And what are your thoughts on that subject?
It's one of those situations where I would say, do what I say and not what I do. I think anybody who ever asks me, should I use antivirus on my Mac, I would say yes.
Antivirus have prevented this particular threat?
No.
Yeah.
No, I believe not. A lot of the time it's going to come down to, what do they call it, social engineering, human error. You have to be convinced into agreeing to something.
Which is indisputably the case in all internet security threats now, including mobile devices and Windows. If I'm running a Windows PC, I absolutely will have security software, because there are just literally millions of bits of malware floating around that will... If they find an unprotected PC, it will just nudge their way in there, which isn't the case in the Mac world. Mm. But you know, the chance of you being hit by something nasty, the likelihood is you'd have done something. You'd have clicked a link, gone somewhere. Not something that's your fault, but you'd have clicked a link, gone somewhere, opened an email or something like that. So I would actually, you know, I'd openly say to people, if you're running a Mac, I'm not sure I'd bother paying for the security software.
There are free options available. So
you should be okay with a free one, but maybe
I've only ever used free.
Yeah.
Well, these days with Windows, it comes baked in, doesn't it? And again, security software vendors will tell you quite legitimately that their products are more proactive and offer better levels of security. But again, whether that means you are significantly overall safer, and I do spend £50 a year or £60 a year, I think it is now, on Norton. I'm sort of the reverse of you, David. I'm not practicing what I preach, but I think. You could, it's quite a dangerous thing to say, but you could, you know, certainly in the Mac world, I would say not run antivirus software.
I can confirm that I've got a MacBook Air at home that I've had for, I think, about 3 years and has never had any antivirus product near it, and it's fine.
Yeah, and I have one that's the same for about 5 years and it's fine, but it depends on your usage, your internet usage.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, what are you suggesting, actually?
Well, no, but this has come from people using a torrent, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know,
Yeah, that's true, actually. There's a temptation to think that this is somehow poetic justice.
But there's a reason why a malware maker would target that particular audience. And it's a bit like in Better Call Saul, where the guy is a criminal and then goes to the police when he's robbed. And it's like, no. Once you're acting outside of the sort of accepted norms of behaviour, you are automatically more vulnerable to being targeted in this way. Mm. There used to be this thing, we always talk about porn, I'm going to mention the word porn, but there used to be this thing that, you know, you shouldn't visit porn sites because they were terribly riddled with malware and stuff like that. And my understanding is that that is no longer the case because, as always happens with that particular industry, it cleaned up its act fairly quickly because it relies on digital distribution. But I do think that, you know, if you are delving into the murky world of sharing files over torrents, then you are slightly more open to risk than if you're behaving in an entirely legitimate way, leaving aside the whys and wherefores of that particular debate.
Yeah. The interesting side of it, for me, is the commercial element. The idea that, and this has been going on for a few years now, but that malware has moved from being the sort of playground of talented teenagers that just want to cause some trouble to being a systematic way of extorting money. And this, again, speaks to the low-hanging fruit side of things. If you are some kid and you just want to show how clever you are, then you might well write something for a Mac just to prove that it can be done. But if you're trying to make money, then obviously you go for the biggest possible market.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge industry. There are parts of countries like Russia or parts of the Far East where the best and brightest do actually end up writing malware code because, if you know, it's to do with exchange rates and stuff. But if you can extort a Bitcoin from someone in the West, that's worth a lot more if you're in a poor country.
What do you think this says to us about the Bitcoin, then? Is the Bitcoin going to become the de facto currency of crime?
Well, it's an interesting thing there because, you know, I wouldn't put any money into Bitcoins. It's a house of cards. I mean, I love the concept, but the idea that it's got any intrinsic value is pretty shaky. But I suppose if you want an anonymous way of getting cash from one part of the world to another part of the world, it's a pretty good way of doing it.
Yeah. I don't think international law is going to approve of that for very long. There has to be something in the pipeline to deal with this, to crack down.
But again, it's a classic thing of who's making laws understands Bitcoin and who's going to bother spending the time to get consensus between multiple governments to deal with Bitcoin. Mm. It's very low on people's political priorities. And also not dealing with Bitcoin. There's nothing wrong with Bitcoin. A global currency actually in some ways makes a lot of sense. But they should call it doubloons, I think. That would make more sense in this
Make it seem
case.
Piratical. Which exactly. Seems appropriate. Yeah,
that's
good.
Good. So, going to go quickly around the room. Say, you know, Macs, are they secure? Do you need an antivirus? So, Mac, antivirus, no antivirus. Chris Martin.
Might as well.
I don't think you need it, but I think you should have it just to be on the safe side.
Ashley.
Yeah, I think you should have it if you can get the free version. They are quite good. They can be good.
I'm going to say don't bother. But that's just because I'm a crazy fool. Good. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks ever so much for your time. And thanks for listening, listener. You're great. You do a great job. Do get in touch to let us know your thoughts and opinions and to shake us down for cash. You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idg.co.uk with questions, thoughts or spam email. We'll be back next week with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech, courtesy of our good friends Audio Technica. Until then, say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.